on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of Invest Talk, May 25th, 2015. Of course, this is our one-hour session. Every day we do it, Monday through Friday. It's kind of a workshop for investors. At least that's what we hope to make it into. And our goal is to see if we can get you involved in the program, get you involved in your own investments, to try to teach you a little bit and give you some information. And we do this by phone on our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHART. And it's the same number right now, and it's live. So you can bring questions to the conversation. Or if you have a take on the day's market or something you want to talk about financial, be happy to do it. Maybe you've seen a company that you like, or you want to talk about insurance, life insurance. I can talk about that. I was in that business for my start of my career. Or maybe you want to talk about housing. I've been involved in housing there for ever since I was 20. I bought my first speculative piece of land. Anyways, as a registered investment advisor, our firm, we are a fiduciary. We have fiduciary responsibilities to make the best possible choices for our clients. Like any investor, our first priority is to protect our assets. And of course, that means protect your assets. The capital at the heart of our investments is the assets. So measuring risk, taking appropriate risks, protecting ourselves against other kinds of risks, that's our job number one. We want to grow the money. That's, of course, the most important thing. And as Warren Buffett says, the second most important thing is not to lose any of the money. And then that is also the first and most important thing. Are you familiar with the term risk premium? Risk premium is the return in excess of the risk-free rate of return that investment is expected to yield. So the risk premium is kind of what the investor gets paid for taking the risks. You measure that gain against a risk-free asset. What's a risk-free asset? A 10-year treasury. Now, that's one way to quantify risk. So if the 10-year treasury is yielding 2.8%, 3%, you need, if you're going to take risk, you need to get a lot more than that. So we like to have an earnings yield, EY, earnings yield of at least 150% higher than the 10-year treasury. When we are looking at a stock to buy, how to measure risk, how to judge risk. That's an important concept that you need to start to get your hands around. So you can, you know, think of the risk premium as a form of hazard pay. You're going to get paid for taking hazardous risks. Employees get hazard pay when they work in dangerous environments, like the steel worker on a high rise, or, you know, you want to get extra return, at least the potential for extra return when you take an extra risk. Otherwise, just buy the 10-year treasury, don't take any risk. Okay? Now, we can use an example of high-quality corporate bonds issued by established corporations. You can use that as a risk-free, but it's not really risk-free. 10-year treasury is. You can use it as a gauge. The high quality corporate bonds issued, they offer very little risk, but they're not riskless. 10-year treasury is riskless. Now, if you're talking about stocks, the smaller, more risky companies should be showing you some great potential, not just a little bit of potential, great potential. Anyways, yesterday one of our callers, the topic of risk came up, and I urged her to try our free risk analysis tool that everyone can use on investtalk.com. It's called Riskalyze. It's a way to come to grips with investment risk, with how much risk you like taking, how much risk is in your portfolio. It starts off with a little short questionnaire asking you what kind of risk you take. And these, they give you ranges of things to answer. You know, would you risk this much to gain that much? Would you risk this much more to gain a little bit more? And you say yes, no, yes, no, and you get to a point where you decide what's your best risk-reward number. It's really a neat piece of tool. You can give it a try on investtalk.com. It's free. Now, do you want to talk more about risk? Maybe not. Maybe I bored you already. So remember, we're live 4 to 5 Pacific time here on Invest Talk. Or between times, you can call us in. But let's go ahead and take a call from Saeed from Oakland. How you doing, Saeed?
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Oh, man.
Bad connection. I can't hear you, Saeed.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, do you hear me now?
Now I can hear you good, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. That's okay, right. I am talking about EOX, Emerald Oil Company.
Yes.
That I have 13,000 shares, and all of a sudden they become only 650. They do reverse split.
One for 20.
And,
one for 20.
Yeah, and so I don't understand what the reverse split supposed to do to the company. Why? I lost like 50% of the stock now.
Well, you lost 50% of you may have lost the number of shares, but a reverse split, which is not a good thing, by the way, Saeed, we know it's not a good thing, but a reverse split doesn't mean you've lost any equity in the company, because technically it's exactly the same amount per, you know, but the price has gone up. Okay, so the price reverse splits too, so it get you to get you have the same amount of value. Okay, exactly.
Okay.
Now, of course, the stock after reverse splitting may go down more. You know, that's possible. But this is why they do that, Saeed. You're probably asking, why would they do that?
Yeah, why do they do that?
Because the stock is traded on an exchange. And exchanges have rules. One of the rules for the New York Stock Exchange, and I don't know if this is on the New York Stock Exchange, is that the stock price has to be a minimum of $5 per share. If it drops below $5, they have to, they give them, the exchange gives them time to get it above $5. But if they fail to give it above $5 over any length of time, they have to do a reverse split. Or they get kicked off the exchange.
Or if you're unlisted, if they don't do it, is that right?
If they're unlisted, they don't. Yeah, they won't reverse split. Yeah, if it's an unlisted stock, won't do it.
Okay. Now, what do you think about the company? Is there the oil prices going up now?
Well, it's never, ever made money. Well, I take that back.
That company,
2014 it made money. But all the years before that and the last couple, this year and next year, it's going to lose money. It's Emerald Oil, everybody, EOX, headquarters out of Denver, engaged in exploration and production of oil and gas in Montana and North Dakota. It's a small company of $752 million in size. And the sales fell 19% in the most recent quarter, March quarter, the first quarter of this year. Before that, sales were growing very fast. And, of course, we all know why. Oil prices fell sharply. It has debt. Management owns 14%. Mutual funds have met sellers. It's not a very strong stock, Saeed. I wouldn't own it. It's a real, if you hold it, just make sure you understand you're taking a big gamble.
Okay.
It's a big gamble on this one. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Saeed. I appreciate it. They've got other issues, careers, school loans, establishing credit. So many young adults don't consider retirement a top priority. Four ways to get millennials to save for retirement. Well, if they don't want to do it on their own, as a parent, I don't know if I would push it. I would tell them to, but I'm not going to do anything other than that. But we have some, a parent has some suggestions she gave, and a couple of them I like. So we'll see. That's going to be our main talking point today. I also want to talk about, you know, I always mention that there's always a summer correction and then a summer rally. Well, I think I've been misstating myself, because what's a summer rally? There really is very little evidence of a summer rally, but a lot of evidence there's always a summer correction, because a rally would indicate that it corrects and then rallies above its old price. The more proper term might be a summer bounce leading to a rally. But I want to talk about that a little bit. I want to clarify that. What do we mean when a summer rally? Because I think a lot of people misinterpret that, and I want to make sure we're clear. Did you see the U.S. Supreme Court ruling on 401ks? Now, you've heard us advertise on this show our 401k solution, and this Supreme Court decision that just came out is one of the reasons why we talk about our 401k solution. We're really concerned about employers' fiduciary liability, getting sued by your employees. And I want to talk about this U.S. Supreme Court ruling that came out about 401ks. So those are things we... Oh, one other thing. As I mentioned before, I'm reading this book called Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Making Out Your Social Security. You know, there's many, many different ways to file Social Security. Do you know what age, what years you had to be born as to what is your full retirement age? And I've mentioned this before about spousal benefits. I'm going to give you a little example of that. Hopefully we can get to that today. If I don't get to it today, I'll definitely get to it next week. The major, oh, and do you see what happened in the market today? Dow was down 52, NASDAQ down 1, the S&P down 5. Talk about a pretty much nothing market. Nothing much is happening. Okay, the major stock market indices have broken through to new highs. But I did some math. Did you see what the new high is? On the S&P for the year, 1.2%. For the Dow, 0.9%. Now, I didn't get to the NASDAQ, even though I think it's higher than 1.2, because I was doing the math just before the show started, and I didn't get to it. So, no wonder people are pretty nervous. I mean, you're not making any money. Are you worried about it? Are you worried about volatility? We haven't seen a lot of volatility this week or last week. Are you still holding your breath thinking about what's going to happen when interest rates rise? Did you see what the Fed said in their minutes? I don't think they're raising interest rates anytime soon. Maybe we need to talk about all these things. You can get through right now and give me a call. We'll ask the questions. 888-99-CHART, and I hope you do, by the way. 888-992-4278. Okay, four ways to get millennials to save for retirement. And this is a discussion between a mother and daughter, and the mother talking about how she can get her daughter to start saving for retirement as she just enters the work world. And one of the ways she suggests is introduce your child, to their future self. And you know they have on Face Retirement, they have a fun tool that lets you age, morphing technology to see your child age. So see how they look when they get old, and hey, this is what you need to say. I don't know if that will work. I think that's kind of, to me, that's fluff. That doesn't really make a lot of difference. But I like this one, putting savings on autopilot, like in a 401k or an IRA. Constantly save the money a little bit all the time from every paycheck so you don't even see it, especially in 401k. It's easy in a 401k because they'll take it out for you and just put it in your 401k. I think that's the smartest thing to do for young people. Start early. Teach them to ignore Wall Street hype. You know, everybody hates Wall Street because they all think they're a bunch of crooks. Okay. You don't have to buy into whatever they are as being crooked. That's a lot of, there are a lot of crooks. There's a lot of crooks in every facet of life. That doesn't mean you avoid it. The stock market is the best long-term way to make money. You just have to be smart enough to realize how to do it, not let your emotions get involved. And one of your emotions get involved is thinking the Wall Street people are crooked. Well, don't pay attention to that. Companies make money, you buy companies. And maybe, that's the way you do it. Okay, I think that's a good idea. Automatic saving, and try to ignore the hype about Wall Street. And there are a bunch of crooks there. I'm not disagreeing with that. Don't think I'm not. I'm saying you don't have to participate in that. I don't. For many of our clients, our balanced income program is just what the doctor ordered. This is a fully diversified program designed to reduce risks to any one stock, bond, or sector. And as you know, it's a great way to produce income, especially as you're entering or getting close to retirement. Reduce the risk and start producing income. 50% is in the high quality bonds, laddered, and 50% in high dividend paying stocks. Take a look. You can see it on investtalk.com.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, there's something to say for buying a certain exchange-traded fund that focuses down south. Time to invest in Mexico? That's our talking point for Monday, May 25th. Please join us then.
888-992-4278. You can reach us anytime you want, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Here's a call from Steve in Fremont.
Hey, I just want to know, what's the advantages of just investing in a regular IRA over investing in, you know, say, blue chip stocks?
You don't invest in an IRA, okay? You invest in stocks, but an IRA is a basket in which you use to put stocks in, okay? So an IRA is a type of account. You can have an individual account. You can have a joint account. You can have a 401k account from to your work. You can have an IRA account. You can have a SEP IRA, a Roth IRA. Those are think of them as baskets in which you put investments in. Okay, so in your IRA, you would have cash and you go buy whatever investments you want with the cash in the IRA. But an IRA is the type of account that you have. It's not an investment itself. It's what you buy and put in the basket. That's the investment. Okay? Hope that's clear. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, I want to clear up what, you know, you've heard me say many times, we're going to probably, you know, there's always, almost every year, a summer correction. And there is. And it's just usually, I mean, it's really high, 85% of the time. And I said, well, I have always kind of, well, you have a summer correction and you rally, and a rally from that correction. Well, it's a rally from the correction, but it's not a really rally if it doesn't make a new high from the beginning part of the correction. If it doesn't exceed that, then it really is not a rally. It's only a rally if it exceeds the price before the correction. And many times that doesn't happen in the summer. That happens in September, October, November. In other words, it's a bottom in the summer. So when people say, I don't know if this is clear to everybody. When people say there's a summer correction and then a rally, they're just talking about, I am at least, and I think most of us are referring to a rally from that correction. Not a rally from before the correction started. We don't, you know, that may not be true. So if the market corrects 10%, then comes back up and makes up all that 10% loss, there's no rally yet. See, until it continues on, and maybe that'll happen in September, October, November. You know, that means it takes that much time to get up above there. So don't be misled when we talk about that, and I'll try to be clearer. There's going to be a summer correction most of the time. A correction occurs between May and September. The market will go down. A normal correction is 10%. And then from that correction, the market will recover. How's that? We'll start to recover into a rally eventually. It's very common. How's that? Is that more clear? Let's try to answer another question before the half-hour break. Mike called from Apple Valley with this question.
I wanted to ask you about Google and what you thought about the valuation right here. Thank you.
I really like Google. I really like their business model. I like the way they make money. I like the fact that when you search, you Google search, and then they show up. They make money by putting things there because it's purposeful. Everybody who searches anything by Google is looking for something. And many of those people are looking for something to buy. And so advertising on Google is valuable because it's a search engine. That's one of the things I like it. Then I like Google because they spread out into different business areas through cell phones, and now they're doing it through cable. And you know, I like Google a lot. Is it a fair value right now? It's selling for $540, Google, G-O-O-G. $540 is going to make $32.80 a share. Okay, so if you take the numbers, okay, of the $540 and divide it by 2016's earning per share of $32.80, you get a PE of 16 with a company growing between 12 and 20%. So in my personal opinion, it's at a pretty good valuation right in here. I would love to be able to buy it right around $500. That's what it was at the very end of the year, by the way. 500, now it's 540. It got up as high as almost 580 back in March and then fell off. So I think it's a good value right here. I do. If you're a long-term owner of Google, you could buy here and put it in a drawer, be fine. I think over a long period of time, this will make a lot of money for you. Now, you might want to wait to see if it pulls back to 500. But I can tell you this, there's a lot of support around 522 to 525, somewhere around there. And if it goes back down there and then balances off, I might, you know, that'd be a triple bottom, and I might buy it then. Or you can just buy it right where it is, and put it in the drawer, and forget about it. I think you'll do fine. Google, I like Google. I like it a lot. I don't own any Google right now, but well, I can see it in my future. I can see it in my client's future and my future. And that's future. I'm not talking about way down the road either. I'm not. A company's statements are a primary source of information. But how do you read them? We're going to get to this today on the next half hour on InvestTalk 101. I hope you stay with us. And you're listening to InvestTalk. The number is 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278.
Part of the InvestTalk experience is visiting our website, investtalk.com. And one of the reasons for a visit is Steve's market commentary. Just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to his market commentary.
Okay, U.S. Supreme Court this week had a ruling on 401ks. The court unanimously favored workers of Edison of California. This is a utility, the big utility in California. The decision favored the workers in this situation. And it was about, the workers claimed that their retail class mutual fund selected by the fiduciary, which would be your plan sponsor, which is your employer, had high-cost mutual funds when they had exactly the same mutual funds in a different class, institutional class, exactly the same at lower cost, and they were not offered. And the court ruled that the employer, the fiduciary of the plans, has a duty, an ongoing duty. Okay, the sponsor of the plan have an on, and so does the fiduciary, which is your employer, an ongoing responsibility to monitor the plan to make sure that if something better comes along, that they keep up with it. Now, this wasn't, Edison International didn't purposely try to get these high-paying mutual funds. They just offered the mutual funds in the plan that were available years and years ago. And then there was a different class of shares offered, and they just never changed. So what this does, it allows workers to more easily sue their employers if the plan is not managed in the best interest of the employees. So, you're an employer. What are you doing on an ongoing basis to make sure the plan has the best and the least expensive mutual funds, that the options are good? And you better have documentation to that. And this is what we've been talking, we meaning KPP Financial, been talking about the KPP 401k solution. We take a lot of that responsibility off the employer's shoulders with no additional cost, and we provide that monitoring and the documentation of that monitoring for you, for the employer. If you don't do it, you're going to be forced. This is going to, besides this, the U.S. Labor Department is coming out with new rules to enforce exactly what this U.S. Supreme Court decision said. One way or another, you're going to be forced to do this. And most employers don't have a clue about this. And you know what the unintended consequences from this might be? Is less 401ks offered for small employers to their employees. Because it's a cost. You know, now they got to do what? But see, there's a way around that. The way around that is have a manager in my firm or some other firm that will do it. We are a fiduciary, and we will take that responsibility on, and it doesn't cost any more money. So, it doesn't cost the employer you know, there's a fee, of course, but it's all paid by, you know, out of the employee's participation. But it's pretty darn small. You usually pay a fee anyways. And this is all this effort is to try to get employers, to get the employees to have better results, because employees have been having terrible results. And not probably because of what's offered in the plant. That might be part of the problem, but most likely because they're not educated enough to know when to buy and when to sell. And they should just stay put, and they don't. They sell at the bottom, buy at the top. Anyways, time for InvestTalk 101, Show Me the Money. A company statements are a primary source of information. So when you're researching a company, you need to know what the company's statements. So what are the statements? So what kind of financial statements are we talking about? A company's financial statements. The first one, a balance sheet. The second one, income statement. Third, cash flow statement. And fourth, statement of shareholders' equity. What does a balance sheet do? Well, that shows what a company owns and what it owes at a fixed point in time. What it owns and what it owes, that's a balance sheet. Income statements show how much money a company made and spent over a period of time. That's an income statement. Cash flow statements show the exchange of money between a company and the outside world, also over a period of time. And the fourth financial statement, the statement of shareholders' equity, and that shows changes in the interests of the company's shareholders over time. Okay, so I understand you probably don't really know what all that means, but I'm trying to demonstrate you really need to start learning what those statements say. Okay, no one financial statement tells the whole story of a company, not one of these. But if you put them together, they do give you a picture of the company. Now, do you have more questions about reading company statements? Give me a call. You can do it now or send me a note. Go to InvestTalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin. And that's InvestTalk 101 for today. If you have questions on any money matter, it's time to check in now at 888-99-CHART.
Steve schedules a handful of portfolio checkup meetings each month. These are individual, informal meetings, an opportunity to get a professional opinion of your current retirement portfolio. We have some new dates for you. San Ramon, June 16th, and San Jose, June 17th. These are first-come, first-served time slots. To save yours, just go to InvestTalk.com and click on Schedule a Meeting.
Hi, this is Drew from St. Paul, and I had a question about Xerox, XRX, and how you feel about that. Thank you very much. Bye.
Xerox Corporation, XRX, headquarters in Norwalk, Connecticut, manufactures printing, publishing systems, copiers, scanners, software, and provides maintenance services. Remember, for us old-timers out there, remember when they first came out with copiers? They used to use, what was that paper they used? It was purple with ink on it. I forgot the name of it. Anyways, they used to use, you know, to make copies, they had, anyways. We used to call it, well, just Xerox this off. Remember now how everybody uses Google? Google it. Just Google it. Used to be Xerox it. And then they lost the lead. Now, how about the company now? Well, sales have been falling for 2 years every quarter in a row. Every quarter for the last 2 years. Sales have gone down, 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 down. It's going to make 98 cents in 2015 after making $1.07 in 2014. Then it's going to make $1.08 in 2016. It's a pretty big company, $12 billion, kind of boring. It's now $11 and, excuse me, 44 cents. And it's $1.08 stock, so that means it's about 11 PE. You know what? There's nothing in this company that makes me want to say, gee, I think I want to own this company. It pays a dividend of 2.4. If that dividend was twice that, then I'd be very much interested in it, but it's not. And the payout ratio is good. I mean, you know, 2.4% of, you know, excuse me, $11 is, you know, what, $0.11? Well, they make $1.08, so they easily can pay it. That's good. Management owns very little of the company. Mutual funds have been slowly buying it. And it just recently fell from a high of 14.5, about 14.25, down to 11.40. I wouldn't buy it. It's just not enough interest. There's no catalyst for it to get to do better. So I need a reason to buy. The reason could be the dividend, but not at 2.4% for this week of a company with sales going down every quarter. Now, they're going down in single digits, percentages, but going in the wrong direction. They got to turn that around. I don't want to buy a company whose sales are always falling. Eventually, earnings will fall with it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Excuse me. I've been reading this book called Get What's Yours, The Secrets of Maxing Out Your Social Security. First of all, do you know what FRA is? When you start filing for Social Security, you know how government loves to use these acronyms about what things mean. FRA is Full Retirement Age. Do you know what yours is? Well, let me tell you. It's either going to be 66 or 67. If you were born between 1943 and 1954, it's going to be 66 years old. If you're born after 1954, it's going to be 67. Okay, so that's what full retirement age is. And remember, we've said before, if you file at your full retirement age and suspend, you get 8% more per year until you're 70 years old. And at 70, you have to take the money. But one thing I wanted to point out, and I mentioned this before, if you are married and you and your wife are about the same age, so you kind of hit full retirement age at the same time, the higher wage earner in your household, whether it's whoever it is, should file and suspend his retirement benefits so he won't collect them till he's 70. He or she won't collect them till he's 70. But the spouse should file for spousal of benefits immediately at full retirement age. They're not collecting on their own Social Security. They're collecting spousal benefits on the spouse's Social Security benefits. And it does not affect the spousal's Social Security benefits one iota. And for like from 66 to 70 or 67 to 70, you can collect spousal benefits all along. And that's going to equal about a full year's tuition for your child. It's not going to be a big lot of money, but it's a Social Security benefit that few people even know about. Look at this book called Get What's Yours is full of this kind of information. And some of it's very obscure, and some of it's kind of complex. I've been highlighting and dog-earing this book all over the place as I read it. I don't read it straight through because I got so many other things I'm more interested in. This is not interesting reading. It's very useful information, but not interesting information. So it's hard to read it straight through. And I think that's one thing that we need to think about when you're collecting for retirement, everybody. Remember, the book entitled is very, very good title, Get What's Yours. Now, we're just a couple of weeks away from our live wealth webinar. This one is about finding investing opportunities. Global investing is a way to find some better values right now outside of our higher priced domestic market. Not telling you to dump all the stocks in the U.S. I'm just saying you got to expand your vision outside the border of just the United States. So how do you overcome those dangers? What kind of dangers are there? What do you have to be careful of? Where are the opportunities? The webinar is set for June 4th at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. It's free. You just have to sign up. Registration is open now on InvestTalk.com.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
This is Mike calling from Charlotte. Listen to you guys on podcast. Love the show. I'm calling with just a couple quick questions. Can you explain what you mean when you talk about dollar price averaging on the way to enter the market? I heard you use that term a couple times, and I appreciate the explanation. Second question was, when you guys do valuations, are you using a free cash flow model for valuations or a dividend model to figure out what a stock is valued at. Thanks a lot and enjoy your show.
Well, on our valuations, we use our own model that we developed ourselves, so it's neither one of those. It's more of a hybrid kind of thing. But, you know, there's simple ways to evaluate stock, but they're very, very rough. But our valuations are a little bit more complex than that. And dollar cost averaging is what the term you're looking for, dollar cost averaging. And what that means is you put, it's ideal for 401ks because you average into the market a same amount of money every paycheck, every couple of weeks, once a month. You just keep eating, and no matter if the market goes down, the market goes up, what you do is you're going to have average prices of your mutual funds and your 401k. So the average price, you kind of want the market to go down to drive your average price down, dollar cost averaging. But the principle is to invest every time period, whether it's every pay period, every 2 weeks, once a month, whatever your time period is, and you do the same amount of money. Not buying the same amount of shares. We're not talking about buying the same amount of shares. The same amount of money. So when the price of the mutual fund comes down, you're actually buying more shares. When it goes up, you're buying less shares. That's dollar cost averaging. And it's a very good way to ignore the market, the swings of the market over a long period of time, and just keep investing, and you'll do just fine. Where people have trouble is when they dollar cost averaging, and I had one of my family members do this during the last recession, when the market starts to fall, or it's usually when it starts to fall, you'll keep it up. But when it falls really heavy, you see your money disappearing in your 401k, it's gone down like in the last recession, 40-45%, and you stop dollar cost averaging. That's the mistake. You don't stop. Because what happens when you stop, you wait to make sure that the market has recovered, and then you start up again. Well, by that time, you missed all the low prices in between because you waited too long to get back in, just like you waited too long to get out. You're selling at the bottom, and you're buying at the top. And you don't want to do that. Dollar cost averaging doesn't work when you stop. It won't work. Your returns will stink. Now, would you like a short list of ETFs that hold a broad mix of dividend-paying stocks or other equities that pay maybe steady dividends? Or a list of commodity ETFs that allow investors to gain exposure to the different, you know, the commodity market, commodity industries? Both of these are available at InvestTalk for InvestTalk insiders. All you have to do is sign up on InvestTalk.com.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. You should know about our next live webinar. This is a one-hour session about global investing. Steve and Justin see this as a solution to this overpriced domestic market, if you do it right. Join them June 4th. It's free, but you do need to register. You can sign up now on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. Let's go to Arias in San Diego. How you doing, Arias?
Pretty good. You, Steve?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Question for you about ETFs. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between the exchange-traded funds and the exchange-traded notes?
Okay. Very good question. ETF versus ETN. Okay. An ETF, well, that's better to start with ETF. An ETN is a note. That is a product issued by a financial company, Goldman Sachs or whoever, okay? It could be an insurance company. It is really a bond, with a type of bond that holds the various stocks and entities in the note. And it's riskier than an ETF because an ETF is not backed by an insurance company or a financial institution. In principle, they work pretty much the same, okay? But one is not a note. It is just an exchange-traded fund, ETF, that holds equities, where the other is an actual type of instrument that holds equities and is backed by the company who issued the note. Usually notes, ETNs, are more costly than ETFs. That's it.
Now, what is your take on the MLPG?
Master Limited Partnerships?
Yes.
MLPs. Master Limited Partners is just what you think it is. It is a partnership. And you don't want to get involved with MLPs unless it's a public partnership, and that's what most people are familiar with. But there's a lot of private ones out there. Stay away from the private ones. Master Limited Partnerships are totally different. They're a partnership of some guys or some company, lady, whoever. They start a partnership, and you get to buy it. They allow you to buy in and be part of the limited partners in the partnership. And they...
I'm looking at your ETF lists, and one of them is the UPS Algerian Natural Gas, which is a MLPG.
Mm-hmm. So that's a Master Limited Partnership. Who is the sponsor of it? In other words, who's issuing it? Who's the one that's running it? Do you know?
Looks like, what is it, UPS? Oh, no, Algerian Natural Gas?
Yes. Well, probably Algerian Natural Gas Company. It's their partnership. Okay, so they produce a partnership. As long as it's a public partnership trading on exchange, it's like a stock, at least disclosed. Usually, the characteristic of these MLPs is they pay high dividends.
Yes, that's what I was looking at. Now, even though the industry for natural gas is not that, let's say it's down, the dividend is still...
The dividend's only good areas, only as good as the income, the cash flow, and the profits of the company. So they can cut the dividend anytime they want to.
So you got to
appreciate the call. Thanks, Aries. Saeed, welcome back. You want to talk about UUP?
Hey, yeah. Yesterday I talked to you, and as I said, I was having some big position, like, you know, and I cut it half today because UUP was very strong today. So what your chart is saying, I mean, it's going to go up. It's where the real resistance is. I was thinking maybe 97.50 DXY. If you can see more professionally than I can, you know, because you are the doctor, I'm just a a guy, I know some medicines, you know.
Well, I can look at UUP for you, and I can give you a chart. It was up. It's come off a bottom of 6 days ago. It started to come off the bottom, and it's been moved up nicely. But it's still pretty far from the top that happened in the middle of March. So all I see, Saeed, this is a bounce that is bouncing up, and I think it's going to start hitting resistance very soon. Maybe another couple of percentage points up. And then
is that possible? You can give me the DXY number because that's easy for me to follow. I mean, what's the number you are looking for? Like 97.50 or 98, and then it's going to break down again.
Well, hold on. Let me see if I can get it. DXY. On my charting program, it's not under DXY. So it's, I don't know what the symbol is.
DXY is a dollar symbol.
I know that. I know that. It's just not showing up on my charting system as DXY.
Okay.
Sorry, got to go. Appreciate it, Saeed. Thank you for the call. Before we close for the hour, don't forget to sign up now for our June 4th webinar. It's at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. If you're looking for bargains, hopefully we can help you with that. And we're going to look outside the U.S. for it. Okay, sign up for it on investtalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.
InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.